It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
But I actually have a very important question.
Okay.
Today, when you said to me, "I swear it will be done," were you quoting Prince Humperdinck talking to Princess Buttercup, or were you quoting Count Rugen talking to Prince Humperdinck?
Count Rugen.
Okay. I wasn't sure. In email, it's hard to read. So, I couldn't tell for sure the tone of the email.
The six-fingered man, as it were.
I was like, does this sound like Chris Sarandon, or does this sound like Christopher Guest? It sounds like somebody named Chris, that's for sure. All right. Hello, everyone. Didn't see you there. welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world 100% compatible with the Oculus Rift. I'm Tony.
And I don't know what that means. Oh, I'm William. And this is episode 139, and I still don't know what that means.
You really need to make sure you do that, because most weeks I don't remember your name. The face is familiar, like when you walk
through the door. What is that thing you just said?
The Oculus Rift is a VR thing. You should check it out. It's kind of cool.
Okay.
Somebody's finally made, supposedly, a VR rig that is pretty much like how people said the VR, like how we always expected it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's fairly lightweight, it's fairly all-encompassing, mm-hmm. It's, yeah. And they're starting to make games that'll, like, be compatible with it and stuff.
Why do they call it that?
I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, Oculus would be sight.
No, yeah, I know, but I mean, why?
Rift, I don't know.
Even using that particular, you know, kind of...
Odds are they're nerds who made it, and they thought it sounded cool.
Okay.
I mean, it was either that or Dark Shadow Wolf, which is a weird name for a VR rig.
Okay.
I
have nothing to add to that.
Yes, but seriously, you have to say your name every time, because I can't.
And I did. I'm William. This is episode 139.
139.
For
those of you just joining us for the first time, pause for a second. Go look up Oculus Rift on Wikipedia. It's interesting. All right. You done? Good. Come back. This show, basically, we have a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, and people write that email address. The email address is themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Once again, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People email that address with questions, comments, topics, cries for attention, all that sort of stuff. And the hat, in and of its own magical self, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the email information on them, and those manifest, again, magically, inside the hat. We draw them out of the hat, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored. That's the whole show. Realistically, that's like a third of the show. Before then, we just talk.
Because we're pals, and yes. We like to visit every once in a while.
And for you guys, it's been a week. For us, it has been 2 weeks.
Because
of Halloween.
Yes, how did it go? You didn't have your porch light on this year.
No, so we didn't do shit.
But you had Wigatoni.
We had Wigatoni, and we watched Rosemary's Baby on Netflix, which neither of us had ever seen before. Have you seen Rosemary's Baby?
I mean, you know, I remember seeing part of it, but whether or not I saw the whole thing.
I would recommend it.
Really?
Yes, I would.
I mean, I wasn't too impressed with the part I saw.
So. I think it's a really good psychological thriller
really?
Kind of thing. Yes. And more so now, because here's the fascinating thing.
I mean, I thought it was kind of corny when I saw it, no, so it must be really corny now.
It's very disturbing, but it's difficult to tell how much of it is intentionally disturbing and how much of it is disturbing because it was made in 1968. There are weird issues of female agency and stuff like that, that some of it is clearly meant to be scary, and some of it were like, I think that's just what they thought was okay to do back then. But really fascinating. For a movie made in the late 60s, it has really good effects, in my opinion. It is really well shot.
Huh.
It's a long-ass movie, especially. I mean, how many horror movies do you know that are over 2 hours? Especially back in that day. This is like 2 hours and 15 minutes. But I thought it was very, very good. It has ridiculous things, mostly, again, because of its age. There's some stuff I don't want to spoil, but in the last scene, there's a few just out of nowhere random sort of side elements come in that are just ridiculous. But I thought it was good. I don't think I've ever even seen Mia Farrow pre, like, 80s.
Oh, really?
God, she's gorgeous. I mean, she's always been an attractive woman, but, like, just so, like, Faye, and, like, I wouldn't have known it was her. It was amazing. And I thought she hasn't done a great job throughout her career. I thought she did a very good job here. Hmm. And John Cassavetes, and a couple of people who we never knew from anything before that did some really good performances. No, I would recommend it. I mean, it's a 60s horror film, so be prepared for that. I mean, it doesn't exactly break the mold or anything, but yeah. But I thought it was very good.
What else has been going on with you in the last 2 weeks? Read through. You attended the read through.
I know, it's going to take us a long time to talk about that, so I don't want to get to that yet. Anytime you and I do something together, it's a bigger thing. I've seen more movies, anyway.
Well, tell me about them.
I saw a movie called Enigma.
Mm.
It was made in 2012. It's a sci-fi movie. Saw it on Amazon Instant Video. It's free to Prime members. I don't know if I would recommend it or not. It's 43 minutes long.
Really?
Yes. Hmm. And it is... It's like an Outer Limits episode. But the special effects are better because it's 2012. But it's like an Outer Limits episode. It's just ridiculous. The acting is the worst thing this side of actual porn. But it's not at all a pornographic movie at all. But the acting's just so stilted and ridiculous. It's like watching a middle school play. The producer says it's like watching a middle school play. It's not entirely wrong, but it looks kind of good. And it's 43 minutes of your life, so it's kind of amusing and whatever. But you can totally skip it. It was very weird there. I'm like, who the fuck makes a 43-minute film?
I don't know. Well, I mean, someone who thinks it might be a pilot, I guess.
Yeah, even then you usually do. Like that's like the exact, like, that's right in the sweet spot of no film is ever that length. Like, if it's a short film, it's shorter than that.
Oh, yeah.
And if it's a film, or even a pilot, usually it's longer. That is the exact length of, like, an hour without commercials.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is.
It's very weird. And then last night, we saw Frances Ha.
Don't know what that is.
Noah Baumbach and Greta Gerwig, who was the female lead in the last Noah Baumbach thing, which was Greenberg. Maybe that's not the last one. It's the last one I saw. Co-wrote this, and he directed it. And it came out a while ago in limited release. It's just now getting wide release. And it's the story of this 20-something sort of just trying to live her life kind of thing. There are similarities to Greenberg, if you ever saw that. It's very much just sort of a profile of somebody's life and shit they're dealing with over a period of time. Hmm. It's all in black and white, which was gorgeous. I don't get why. It didn't bring anything to it, but it was really attractive. And it's very, it was beautifully done anyway. I believe the producer feels a little mixed about it. I have some issues with it. Overall, I think I liked it. It's a little, and those who know Noah Baumbach will not be surprised. It's a little precious. It's a little pretentious in places. It's got a sort of hipsterish vibe, which self-indulgent, which at times can annoy me. But I think it is a really nice profile. I think from a filmmaking perspective, it was done very well. I've said before, I don't like movies where the characters are younger than me. This appears to be the cutoff. This is people who are largely in their mid to late 20s. And that's recent enough that while I don't feel the way they do anymore, I sort of remember it. And so it makes sense. When you get back to like teenagers, yes, I remember being that stupid, but it's so far removed now that I'm like, God damn it, I just want to sit them down and we'll have a talk and this whole movie doesn't have to happen. With these ones, I'm like, yeah, I remember being like that. And I don't know, the movie gave me nostalgia, even though it doesn't really match my life in any way. And I thought it was good performances. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I would recommend it, I think. If everything I said doesn't totally turn you off. It's definitely an art film. But I liked it. I liked it a lot. I think that's it.
Really?
I started playing Trish's Ratchet and Clank game a little bit. I forgot how addictive those things are. You're just this cute little fuzzy creature blowing the crap out of all these aliens with all these crazy weapons. It's really fun. Yeah, have you got anything interesting to talk about besides the rehearsal?
No.
Alright. We had a rehearsal, a run-through of Briar Rose.
Yeah. It went really well, I thought.
I think so. My frog impression got a little racist, but I'm adjusting
that. I didn't get that.
The thing is, it's very specific racist. My frog accidentally ended up sounding like the head of the Trade Federation in Phantom Menace.
Okay, maybe a little.
And
I
refuse to back down from the belief that the head of the Trade Federation in the Phantom Menace is racist. Is not racist, because it totally is.
Well, yeah, I kind of agree with that.
So, but I haven't heard. I mean, that's in my own head, so I haven't heard. I haven't listened to the recording.
I kind of see what you're saying. Yeah. I didn't think so at the time, but I've listened to it
a little bit. I'm pretty happy with the prince himself. And I'm fairly happy with Sausage. I need to fix a little bit there, but I'm pretty happy.
Yeah.
With that. I just got to tweak Frog a little
bit. Well, and I liked the approach you had with Frog. I thought, and how the subtle change it was from just the prince's voice, I thought that was spot on.
But this is the problem I had before, too. I need to adjust slightly, because there's a certain rhythm and mannerism to the prince that I don't remember until I get to the prince. So the frog doesn't have it, and then the prince does, and then the frog does afterward.
Yeah, right.
So I have to like work on that.
Of course, all that means is that maybe when you record the actual part, you can just record the prince first or something.
Possibly,
and do the frog right after.
I may give a couple different takes on that. I'll probably hopefully record it pretty soon, since I just have the equipment here, and my parts are all really small.
Yeah.
That sounded weird. Anyway, and everybody was there except Vermon couldn't make it.
Yeah.
The internet situation went better.
Yeah, we didn't really have any problems.
We lost some people a couple
Well,
times,
that seems to be on their end, not on our end.
Well, and it's not an issue that we're going to have with actual recording.
Right,
this was just so we could all be together. After that, several of us, Hard Hat number one, Mark McKibben, and his wife, Michelle, and Dave of Id, and his wife, Robin, and William and I went to see Azure Talon, who's currently home, but he was in the hospital for another treatment over here. He's doing okay. Not quite finished yet, but they're working on it. He seemed okay. Talked to him for a while. You guys talked to him for longer than we did. We had to break it up because there was too many of us to be in the room at once, so.
Yeah, it was good to visit with him. It was good to see him because, you know, the last time you went, I couldn't go. And the time before that, we went together and he was gone, so.
And I was just glad to get my damn headphones back.
It was good to visit with him for a while.
He'll be back in a couple weeks, so I'll at least probably get up there. And then William begged off and the rest of us went out for delicious Indian food.
Yeah, you guys went to
Exotic India.
Yeah, it's a good place.
Because that's the only place David and Robin ever want to go.
Really?
And since it's like, literally, we've had dinner with them 3 times in Iowa City now, and the first time was their first experience going there. Possibly their first experience with Indian food.
Really?
Every time since then, we have gone there, and it's been their idea. But it's basically Trisha's and I's favorite restaurant in town, so we have no problem with that whatsoever.
Yeah, our household, it's our favorite probably too, so.
And I had just been talking about it with Mark that night earlier, so it worked pretty well. There was a little bit of mix-up on some food, but it went okay, and then I got to bring some home to the producer. So that was a very busy Sunday all around.
Yeah. Busy and productive.
Yeah, I don't think there's too much else going on. I'm still reading the same book. I'm almost done with it. I bought a couple things. Just under the wire. Now I really consider it the time period that you can't buy stuff for yourself anymore till after Christmas. Or in my case, till after my birthday, so it's even longer. But I got Fable 3.
Wow.
I haven't played it. And at this point, it's old enough. It was $11. So I just bought it.
Looks fancy.
Have you never played the Fable games?
No.
I thought you guys had played the Fable games.
No.
Oh, I should lend them to you. I like them a lot.
I mean, are they on PS3? I thought that was one of the reasons we hadn't played
them. Oh, that's right. You're PS3 only. Never mind. Yeah, you're fucked then. All right. And I got this.
What is that?
This is a DVD.
Yeah, The Room?
The Room.
I don't know what that is.
Neither do I entirely. Here's what I know. There's a man who goes by the name... This is in real life. This is not the plot of the movie. By the name Tommy Wiseau.
Okay.
Nobody's exactly sure where he's from. He tells different stories about where he was born and where he's been and things like that. He clearly is some sort of European because he has an odd accent to him. But nobody's entirely sure. He has a fair bit of money. He lives in Los Angeles. He wrote, produced, directed, and starred in this movie, which, at the time, was considered a serious dramatic thriller called The Room.
Okay.
Nobody else was involved. I mean, there were other actors, but, like, this was his vision untampered with. And it came out and was wildly regarded as one of the worst films ever in a spectacular and awesome way. Just insanely, crazily bad. To the degree that now it's fairly popular and he goes around claiming it's a black comedy and it was always meant to be that way. And I had never actually seen it. And we have kind of a tradition with my gaming group and the producer and I. On New Year's Eve, we watch shitty movies.
Yes,
and it's not too long away, and it's $8. And I've just been curious, because in L.A. it was a very big thing, because they actually all, like, know him. And I mean, they're there. And I listen to a lot of podcasts that are set there, and so it comes up a lot. And I'm always like, I need to actually see it. And it's $8, so I'm like, I'll get it. So I got it.
But you're going to wait until New Year's?
I don't know. I'm debating that. Because part of it is, you know, the fun of we all at the same time. But then there's the part that's like, I can shepherd them through it. Like I did with Black Dynamite and other things. Where, like, you know, they're like, what did they say right there? And I'll already know because I've seen it. You know, that kind of thing. So I don't know yet, and I don't know that I can wait that long either. We'll have to see. But I'm very excited about that. All right. So, I have an important question for you.
A question for me?
Yes. Not from the hat. Has your goddaughter purchased Gone Home?
It's being purchased right now.
Oh. Like, as you're leaving the house, she's
I don't really know why it didn't get purchased before today, but...
That's fine. This is in a timely fashion.
Happening today.
Do you know if it's getting played tonight?
I don't know that.
All right. those of you not in the know, at the rehearsal, I handed his goddaughter $20 cash and said, buy this game, gone home, play it, see how amazing it is, and then force William to play it, because I can't seem to do it, and the people in his household have more power over him for that kind of thing. And my original plan had been to have William do it, and then have him make them do it, but I could see that wasn't working, so I went the other way. And she's newly an adult, so I thought, you know, this is responsibility now.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
So I gave her $20 cash, and she took it, and I said, okay, first of all, never take $20, never take money from a guy twice your age when you don't know why he's giving it to you. Second of all, buy this game. And so I'm pleased to hear that she has, or is.
Yeah, it's supposedly happening right now.
Play it. It's not very long. Heck of an experience.
Mm.
All right, now to the hat.
Okay. You know, while we were talking to Azure Talon, it came up. Oh, wait. Dave and Azure Talon. I think even Robin. You said she didn't listen.
She only listens when David forces her to listen to parts.
Well, anyway, they mentioned the episode where I talked about, you know, that experience I had with that job where I was making those...
Oh, yes.
Pastry things that I don't want to talk
about.
Oh,
yes,
about.
No, because that's a legend. David specifically told me about the time he made Robin listen to that.
Yeah.
That is a legend.
They told me that.
Airy.
How big a deal that was to them, all three of them, and I still don't get it.
It's amazing. I should go back and listen to
it. Well, one of them, I think David said, or it was either David or Azure Town, I don't remember. One of them said that part of it was that I usually am so calm, and I was clearly agitated.
Oh, yes. No, there's
and that's part of it.
There's a veracity to the experience.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I was clearly...
That's the thing, is it's intense. You're very vulnerable in that story.
Well, that's how I feel about the topic.
It's also hilarious.
Okay, well, I'm glad it entertains people.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, dear TMTH, what are your seven wonders of the world? Craig wants to know.
Craig, seven wonders of the world.
The hat.
I feel like a joke about boobs should be made right here.
It's one of them.
But I don't feel like making it, so pause the podcast, make your own joke about seven breasts, and then unpause, and we'll go on. Also, the producer's body is a wonderland.
That was my joke.
Oh, that was... you didn't pause.
Sorry.
All right.
Let's try it again.
We'll get back to you.
Do I have to read the question again to try it again? How does that work?
She wants us to... She's going to pause the podcast now.
Oh.
I'm not sure how.
Okay.
Although technically she is the producer, so.
My seven.
Well, this is always tricky, though, because there's different, in the actuality, there's the seven natural wonders of the world, and there's the seven man-made wonders. Are we just saying this is just, like, our top seven things anywhere? Like, what does that mean?
You could also read it as your top
seven things
you
just
wonder
about.
Yeah. I wonder...
Who wrote the Book of Love? yeah. There's so many interpretations here.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you actually ever seen anything that's on a real Seven Wonders list? Like, have you seen any of the seven man-made wonders, the seven
well, I mean, of course,
natural wonders?
The original Seven Wonders...
are mostly gone.
Yeah. In fact... Are there any of them left? What's left?
Yeah, the Parthenon's one of them.
Oh, okay.
You can see the Parthenon in Nashville. I don't think that's the one, but the Parthenon... I know this because of the Seven Wonders board game. There's the Parthenon, Colossus of Rhodes. You can see where the feet were.
The Lighthouse of Alexandria, but that's not
that's
there
gone.
Anymore.
Hanging Gardens of Babylon is totally gone.
The pyramids, are they?
Oh, yes. The Great Pyramid of Giza is one. So you can see that. So that's two that you can actually see. And then... I should know this because we play the game.
You mentioned Babylon already.
Hanging Gardens.
You mentioned all the ones that I happen to know off the top of my head.
No, seriously, though. There's a board game, and there's seven of them. They added the Colossus, but it was eight.
But you shouldn't disparage the Parthenon at Nashville. Because it is, full replica.
Is it full-sized?
I believe so.
Wow, all right.
They built it for the World's Fair originally, and then they liked it so much they kept it.
All right, so go to Nashville. But what are the two that we're forgetting, hon? You play this game more than me.
What do you have?
We got the lighthouse.
Do you have the Hood of Carnassus?
Isn't that the lighthouse? No, she's right. There's a mausoleum thingy.
Yeah. Do you have the lighthouse at Alexandria?
Yeah, we mentioned that.
That was the lighthouse I mentioned a second ago. But the Holly, yeah, so that one, we're missing one more.
Just a minute, the game's right here.
All right.
I'm going to open it up.
Yes.
Rhodes?
Got Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
Got Rhodes, Giza, Parthenon.
Oh, crap.
There's another Greek one we're missing, like a big statue of Zeus or some shit like that.
No big statue of Zeus.
What's at Olympia?
Alright. Giza. Oh, god damn it. I fucking hate you.
What?
Zeus? Olympia.
There's a giant statue of Zeus at Olympia.
Is that him? He's got Nike on one hand, and then I'm not sure who that is on the other hand.
Oh, I totally thought you meant the swoosh.
No, Nike, don't.
Who's that look like? Does he have a beard? Literally, the only Greek god in the history of anything that had a beard was Zeus. No one else was allowed. It was a rule. None of that is true.
And
yeah, that's got.
There's supposedly a new Seven Wonders, and I don't know what those are.
Really?
Yeah.
There's okay.
The modern age.
So we're agreed that neither of us have seen any of those.
Oh, that's Artemis, apparently.
Artemis has a beard?
Wait, this is Ephesus. Wait. So that's not the Parthenon, then.
Oh.
Okay, the mausoleum, according to the game, which who knows if that's canon. The
this is good radio.
Of Helicarnassus. The statue of Zeus at Olympia.
There we go.
Lighthouse of Alexandria. Colossus of Rhodes.
Yes.
Colosseum of Rome.
That's no, that came later. That was the expansion.
Do I need to go get Wikipedia? Temple of Artemis and Ephesus, Hanging Gardens of Babylon, and the Pyramids of Giza. Oh yeah, that's for leaders.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's eight. That's eight Seven Wonders.
I feel bad about myself right now, and I don't fully know why.
Why? Because you paid a lot of money for an education at Grinnell, and you don't know the Seven Wonders of the classical world?
No, I think because I paid a lot of money for the sound recording equipment, and right now we just have my wife reading off mic from Board Game.
So...
I feel bad for your listeners, because apparently they like this shit.
This is what I mean.
Because clearly, programming that brings them back.
Clearly, they have difficulties in their life. That this is what they do. Okay, have you seen any natural ones? Have you ever seen the Grand Canyon?
No,
me neither. That
seems
weird.
Have you seen Pikes Peak in Iowa?
Yes.
It's pretty cool. Just because you thought you were gonna die.
You see Effigy Mounds?
Yes.
Trish tried to kill me at Effigy Mounds.
I didn't try. You just tried to die.
Effigy mounds are pretty cool.
Badlands,
the Badlands in South Dakota are very
I've driven
cool.
through the Badlands. That's cool.
Very, very cool.
That is very cool.
No, I've not really been to any of the western United States, like national parks or whatever. I've not really been to any of them.
That's where the best ones are.
See, that's funny. Well, that's you say the Badlands, and to me that is west.
Well, it is. That's when I've
technically
been
it is west of here.
Yeah, that's and I've been to that one.
Yeah.
But... I haven't been to the ones most people think about.
You've been to Waldrug?
Yes, I've been to Waldrug.
You've been to hell.
I've been to hell.
And back.
And paradise.
He's been to paradise, but he's never been to him.
What?
That's the song. Opening credits of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. I've been to paradise, but I've never been to me. Lip-synced by the incomparable Hugo Weaving in drag. I gotta see that movie again. I haven't seen that movie in a while. That movie's awesome.
I don't. It's weird that I can't answer this question. I mean, there are a lot of places I've been that I.
I would figure like you would have like seven specific cornfields or something. I feel like.
Well, maybe that's why this is so difficult, because there are places that I like to go.
Melcher.
That I like to be, but they're not like wonders of the world. They're just things that are meaningful to me, that are more important to me than the Grand Canyon or anything like that would ever be. I mean, as cool as the Grand Canyon would be, and I do hope to see it someday, you know, it's not going to be near as cool to me just as going home, really, honestly.
That really sounds like the climactic monologue in a Noah Baumbach movie.
I don't know what to say. I mean, this is just...
I don't know what to say. Jamming on the one. Jamming on the one. Robert!
I also...
What sound does a giraffe make?
Enjoy going to...
What does the fox say?
East Tennessee, to where my ancestors are from. I mean, when I go there, I feel...
Do you drink Doctor enough?
No. I feel really connected to that place, and I like being there. Again, these are places that are personal to me, that no place I could visit that's supposed to be really spectacular. I mean, I'm going to like those places and be impressed by them, but they're not going to make me go to someone and say, oh, you've got to go see this because it's the most wonderful thing ever.
Friends of mine from East Tennessee went to visit family and came back and brought me Dr. Enough, which is supposedly a regional soft drink there. It's very popular. Comes in these little glass bottles. I drank it. It was terrible. Here's the thing, though. Since then, they moved away. I believe they live in St. Louis now. Other people from East Tennessee never heard of this. So I'm like, so basically, they put some nasty crap in bottles... faked a label, and then told me the story. And premeditated, because they told me about Dr. Enough before they ever brought it back.
Right, but where were they from? Like Knoxville or something?
I don't remember. East Tennessee. Supposedly that whole half of the state just drinks it like water. But then nobody else from that side heard of it. That seems weird. I've
been there a few times and never heard of it, but that doesn't mean anything, because I don't really, you know, pay attention to soft drinks.
Or remember anything ever. So, the fact that you're like the umpteenth person who's been there and no idea what I'm talking about. I think they made up a fake soft drink just to see if I would drink what I'm imagining is some sort of animal urine.
Well, what are your seven wonders? Because I'm completely useless for this, I guess, as I am usually for these types of questions.
I will tell you. My big life-changing experience, it would have been sometime in the fall of 1998. We were in the, by the way, the cops are coming, so we have to cut this short. I was in the Lake District of England, and we went up on one of the many hills there. I'm sure it was called Care something, I don't know. And I stood at the very top, and there's like this big rock up there, and you can just sort of sit there, and the wind was whipping around. And I looked out over the whole of the Lake District, and it was just the right time of year where just everything was just incredibly green. And it was a transcendent experience to just see what seemed like the whole world just spread out from there.
See, I can totally relate to that. In specific places I've been in my life, and to me, those places, you can't even compare that to, say, the Grand Canyon or the ocean or whatever. As cool as those things are, even breathtaking as those things are, they can't touch those moments in those places.
Well, I think you can't pick those moments. I've actually had a kind of a moment like that looking at the Pacific Ocean on a beach that I had been at many times before. But yeah, you don't get to pick when that, and there's so many factors. The reason I would most likely never have an experience like that at the Grand Canyon, I imagine, is because there's all these fucking tourists everywhere.
Well, and maybe you would have an experience.
And the thing is, there's all these fucking tourists at the Lake District, too. We were there at just the right time. It was also really amazing to me that same fall when I hiked along the Pembrokeshire Coastal Trail in Wales. I don't think it would have been nearly as cool if there had been people there, and it's a popular spot, but I came just late enough in the season that all the summer holiday folks were gone, and early enough in the season that the kids hadn't gotten, like, their holiday yet. So I was the American. I think I've talked about that before. My reputation preceded me on the trail, because the only other people were around were all these retirees who were just driving their cars. So I would get to a place, and they'd be like, oh, you're the American. We've been expecting you. And there was some amazing sort of feeling, you know, the sort of one with nature jazz there too. I don't know, as I get older and I get more skeptical about these things, my memories of such things get a little bit tarnished.
What do you mean skeptical?
As I slip further and further towards being just an atheist and ceasing to believe in some sort of greater power, and so what I'm seeing is just what I'm seeing, and the sense of something greater or whatever is purely psychological and really just neurochemical.
But what if it was those things? How does that make it any less amazing?
Oh, it's less interesting to me that, ooh, my brain secreted this thing that made me think, ooh, versus, like, you know,
really?
The spirits were there and I felt them, you know, different thing.
I see. I guess it doesn't take any of the wonder out of it for me.
Well, but you don't know because you're not an atheist.
Well, no, I'm not, but I don't know if...
The primary feeling I had in those places was a sense of connectedness. And tied into that was a sense of the divine. If I cease to believe in the divine, a lot of that connectedness goes away.
So yeah, I guess my experience is... you know, I feel that sense of connectedness, but I don't know if I sense that it's a direct connection to the divine.
Oh, no.
More of a connection with something the divine has created, and I'm grateful for that. So I think even if I stopped thinking that there was such a thing as a divine, I would still feel the same thing. I'd still be grateful for it, just not grateful to anyone, just grateful in a more because I'm grateful that way too. I'm grateful in two ways.
Well, and I'm
instead
not,
I'd just be grateful in the one way.
I'm not grateful for the ocean. I'm still grateful for the ocean.
But I mean, you know,
that moment,
because you
is
are
less special
because
to me.
You are connected. I mean, the connection you're feeling is real. There is a connection between you and everything else.
Yeah, but there's. When you take away that sense of divinity, for me at least, there's no difference between that moment on the beach and any other moment I had on the beach that I didn't feel that way.
Really?
Why would there be? What's the difference?
Well, because for whatever reason in those other experiences, there was a little bit of awareness that eluded you. You know,
but it's not necessarily awareness at that point. It's just a neurochemical reaction to give me a particular emotion.
That you then become aware of. And then you reflect on it.
My amazing awareness of an emotion. Like, that's way too internal for me to be that blown away by.
It's awareness of an emotion, but it's an emotion that makes you aware not just of the emotion, but it makes you think about how you're connected to all these things in a profound way that you didn't think about before. So that makes the experience very different.
Yeah, I think maybe I wasn't having the same experience you were. Oh. At the time, in both cases, I felt I was becoming aware of the divine. Hmm. And in some cases, in a very abstract sense. And now, I just think it was a particular just trick of my emotional state at the time. It was because my blood had been pumping and I was hiking up there really fast. And it wasn't... It was physiological and it wasn't conceptual. Potentially. Again, I want to say potentially, because I haven't officially gone over
but
to calling myself an atheist.
Maybe this will help me understand it better. Did you sense that it was something that...
I felt it. Physically felt it.
Yeah, but you didn't at first give it as much... See it as much as something that was coming from inside you and more from something from outside you, like reaching in and touching you in a special
potentially
way? Potentially. Oh, I see.
But more than that, I considered it, you know, a broader... Well, hell, I was pagan back then, so it was a broad, magical thing. My energy was swirling with other energy. And I wasn't thinking in those terms at the time, but that's the feeling I had. I can remember the first time I genuinely thought I felt the presence of the goddess. Back in my apartment in Grinnell. And now I look back on that and think, most likely that was me convincing myself of that. And nothing was actually happening except I was thinking it was.
But what? How does that make it what if it was you just were thinking it was? See what I'm saying? There seems to be a circular logic here. Obviously you were thinking it was.
Yes.
So where does... I mean, that was always true. You were thinking it was true. So where... I don't understand the part where somehow you thinking it was true becomes less valuable than it was before.
In my original version, I was perceiving the reality of an actual definitive experience that was not simply in my head.
Not simply in your head.
No, but was in fact... It wasn't just, you know, my hands tingled. It was my hands tingled because God was there. And if I no longer believe in God, my hands tingled because I got myself worked up enough that I think I felt my hands tingle. But it was me convincing myself of it. God was not present. Mm. That's a very different experience.
Mm. That's interesting.
Because I can get myself... worked up to have all sorts of physiological reactions.
No, that's true. People can, you can hallucinate, see somebody that to you, I mean, they're there. I mean, there's no doubt in your mind that person
yes.
is standing there, but nobody else can see them.
Yes.
So you know that they're not there. I mean, this is how powerful your mind is.
Well, and I think it's a different magnitude of experience if you're like, this person was there. And nobody else could see them, but I could, and they were there, versus, yeah, so my brain made me hallucinate a person. That's also kind of exciting, but in a very different way. It's not nearly the same thing.
No, but...
As saying, like, an actual spiritual being came down and revealed itself only to me.
Okay.
Versus
no,
my brain...
It's a...
I hadn't slept enough.
But really, when you think about it, it's just a different way to tell the story about what happened. And it means something different, significantly different.
Yes.
But when you get right down to it, it's just a person changing their mind about how they're going to interpret it and remember it.
Yes.
I mean, because the fact of the matter is, if I were to see somebody that nobody else could see, I could say, I've hallucinated that. Or I could say, well, this is just a person that only I can see. And there's no real way... To prove one way or the other, which
no,
one
no,
of those
no,
things
definitely
is true.
Not. And in no way am I trying to prove that.
No, I realize that. I'm just explaining.
But I'm saying if, at the time, you believed it was a person who had only revealed themselves to you, and the next day you also believed that, and for what, you'd be like, wow, this was kind of an impressive, amazing thing. And then years later, you're like, you know what? I probably hallucinated it.
Okay, but
I don't think you'd be going, wow, it's really impressive. Just as impressive, equally impressive, that I hallucinated that one time.
Well, you might, but...
I would not.
But that's not really my point. My point is, it's interesting to me that, you know, a person could just sort of change their mind about that interpretation. I mean, there's no... What's motivating you? I mean, it's not like there's any evidence or proof that would motivate you to change your mind about it.
No, but there are some fundamental assumptions about the universe that I had. Back then, the short answer is, if I don't believe in God anymore, if I thought I had an experience involving God, and I no longer believe there is a God, that experience by definition is something new.
Oh, so these are two separate things that intersect logically in a...
Yeah, that's how I started this by saying now that I'm becoming more and more an atheist.
Yeah, but I was getting the impression that that was happening because you were changing your mind.
No. My change of feelings about my exciting transcendental experiences are a symptom of my ever-growing skepticism regarding higher power.
That's a whole different thing entirely.
And which is completely beyond my control and is something that I really wish I didn't experience. I feel really sad about it.
It bothers you?
Very much. I remember what it was like to believe, and I vastly prefer that. But as I constantly try to explain to people, particularly overzealous people who try and convert me to their faith, you don't get to pick what you believe. You can pick how you act, and you can act as someone who believes, but I can't make myself believe in something.
Do you think... So you think this is happening, it's just happening, it's not being caused by anything?
I don't know, I'm sure there are reasons. Oh, okay. I'm sure the sum of my life experience and the combination of prescription medications I'm taking and my wife and the torment she makes of my life every day are all together combined. I mean, I'm sure, no, I don't, I think nothing happens without cause, even be it random, But I don't know what it is.
It's hard for me to imagine.
I can even theorize ways how I could gain faith back, beginning some sort of religious practice. I'd be like, I could start going to a church, and if it was a particularly charismatic or persuasive church, over time, going through it, I might eventually be convinced. But in my head, right now, that's me saying I might eventually go and delude myself and I think not discover the divine again, but I might eventually fool myself, and so that's not particularly appealing.
It's hard for me to imagine, because I am a believer and I can't imagine being anything else.
Oh, I'm not surprised. I think most people end up in that situation. I traditionally was very agnostic, and then I sort of became a believer and ended up with some pretty serious faith, and now I have gone on to the other side. I'm still arguably agnostic. And actually, as somebody pointed out, Gnostic-agnostic is really sort of a different axis than theist-atheist. I don't know how many people go through this, and it's not something I would have imagined before. Hmm. Especially just the idea that, I've always been fairly agnostic and fairly of the belief that, why would I have a particular belief because I can't know? And I think where I gained my faith was I had experiences that I'm like, I don't really know what happened. But now, I don't know. I lost it. I don't know what did it.
Well, I mean, for me, I don't know, of course. But when I say that, I'm talking about a particular kind of knowledge. I mean, if someone put a gun to my head and claimed to know whether or not there was a God. And then they ask me, so I'm going to ask you if there's a God, and if you give me the right answer, I'll spare your life. But if you give me the wrong answer, I'm going to blow your brains out. I would say with utmost confidence that there is a God, fully believing that I was going to survive that encounter. And also...
except that you'd be like, this guy's crazy, so I don't know what he'll...
Well, that's true. I also would think if the guy ends up pulling the trigger, that's not going to prove anything to me either. But that's just how I feel about it. And I've had things happen to me that, were pretty dramatic to me. Compared to what lots of people in this world go through, it's nothing. But to me...
You've told some pretty freaky stories on this very podcast.
Well, those stories don't really have anything to do with my faith, actually. But I'm talking about challenging things, the kinds of things that people often point to when they say they lost their faith because this happened and they didn't know how God could allow such and such to happen.
No. I never believed in that kind of divinity, so that was
I
guess
maybe I have never either. I mean, I used to read...
I've never particularly believed in sin or judgment as tied to the divine.
Yeah, I guess so. I haven't either, really.
And that's where a lot of that shit comes
but,
from.
But, you know, I remember when I was reading... I mean, I still read this kind of stuff, but I haven't read these types of things for a long time. I would read, like, why there was a... It wasn't a book by Bertrand Russell, I don't think. I think it's like an anthology, Why I'm Not a Christian. A few other books that some Christians I knew, they told me that I can't read those books because it, you know, it challenges my faith and it makes me doubt. And I didn't even understand that.
Yeah.
Because.
But I also don't understand.
How does it do that?
The existence of most things like that. I get really tired of people arguing faith in any direction. Mm. The whole point is there's no proof. The whole point, I mean, you take it on faith. That's what the phrase means.
Yeah, that's exactly what
and
I think,
and in both
too.
Directions. So the whole trying to convert people drives me crazy.
Yeah.
And the whole trying to dissuade people from there. And the whole saying, no, Christianity is bunk because look at all the shit that Christians do. You know what? They're not the belief structure. The belief structure is the belief structure. And so if you honestly believe the tenets of the Christian faith are X, Y, Z... and I don't believe in those, absolutely. But if you say, this guy is a Christian and he's an asshole, or this guy says he's a Christian and he's an asshole, that doesn't say anything about the tenets of the Christian faith.
No, I don't think so either. But I mean, I'm talking about just reading even science books and challenged the Genesis story or whatever.
No, and
of course, I wasn't a big believer in the Genesis story.
You should in no way be concerned about people attempting to challenge your faith. Also, you should in no way be trying to challenge people's faith.
No, exactly. That's exactly how I
So I'm like, why the fuck would you write that book? But also, why the fuck would you be scared of reading that
book?
Well,
but, you know, for me, also, my faith is informed by a lot of my experiences with, you know, nature and things like that. So, I mean, to me, science tells you what nature is like.
Yeah.
If a religious text makes a claim about nature that's like testable, well, I don't take that seriously. I mean, that's not what a religious text is for, in my opinion. So a religious text isn't a science text. So, and I don't see a big conflict between religion and science.
As I constantly bring up in these discussions, and I'm sure I've brought up many times on here, in the Penn and Teller bullshit episode where they were debunking shit about the Bible, which they were actually just debunking the people who were trying to prove the Bible. They said right off the bat, if your argument against any of the stuff we say is your faith, we have no argument against that. Like, we can't poke a hole in you having faith in something. We can poke holes in you attempting to prove it, and that's what we're going to do.
That's right. But anyway, we've really gone off the topic here quite a bit. But do you have, I mean, obviously I don't really have anything like a Seven Wonders. I mean, except, you know, my home is one of them.
Mm.
I'd say the Blue Ridge Mountains in the Smoky Mountains. I love going there. I liked and was very moved by the Badlands. And I even enjoyed a lot of places in the Black Hills.
I have less of that than I used to.
But they'd have to be natural places. I can't think of a man-made place that I'm like, oh my gosh, that's amazing.
There are places I would like to see. There is, I feel, nostalgia. There's stuff I'm very interested in. I, as I think I've mentioned it before, found it an incredible experience to go to the Mall of America on Black Friday.
Well.
And I took somebody one time with me who clearly had a similar experience, because when we walked in, she lost her mind. She was like, her eyes were huge, and she was just hanging off of things, looking, and just stared for like 10 minutes before we even went anywhere, because it's phenomenal. It's amazing as a cultural construct to see that it's so fascinating, and it's so moving in a certain way. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm saying it's amazing. And I have, so I have things like that. But stuff that I really feel tied to. No, as I get older, I'm less into that. As I get older, I'm more dependent on material things. I lead a very cushy, comfortable life, and I like it that way. But I feel less of a deep connection. I get that more with people now. I'm less concerned about where I am in the world and what I have as long as Trish is there. I'm less concerned about what I'm doing of an evening as long as I'm spending the evening with you. I'm less concerned about where I go on a trip as long as I get to relax and have a good time. And you can relax and have a good time most places.
Yeah, most places.
I don't know, I'd vacation to North Korea, but, you know, in general. And the rest is just all flavoring, essentially. And I like different flavors at different times, and some flavors I don't like. Some flavors I probably won't ever try again.
Well, there's even places I'd like I'd like to go to Northern Ireland. I'd like to go to Northern, well, all over England, really, and Wales. I'd like to go to Switzerland. I'd like to go to Southern Germany. You know, places where my ancestors are from, mostly. Yeah. And I imagine that, you know, that if I spend any time in the Black Forest, say, I would feel a connection there like I do in the Smoky Mountains, and that that would be a top place on my list to visit. On the other hand, if someone were to tell me, well, William, you're never going to visit those places, I would say, okay. I mean, it's not a huge priority.
I might be saying, well, I mean, that becomes the thing, too. But that's the thing at this point. It ceases. I don't have the place distinction, because, yes, would it be impressive to go, well, it has been. I mean, I've seen some very impressive sites, some natural, some man-made, and there's others I'd like to see. That being said, I'm going to bring it back again. I was incredibly impressed with Gone Home on a variety of levels, and it had an impact on me, and it changed my perspective. And I'm fast. I consider it amazing as a construct, different. Not a huge construct. It's not like the Grand Canyon. That's it. It's a video game, and but what was created and what the people put together and what it has done and how it compares to everything else I've seen in the world really impressed me and stayed with me. And that's the thing: video games, books, conversations I've had, people, most especially. And it's a weird. I don't have a clear distinction to say a place really ties to me versus any of the rest of that stuff.
No, I totally agree. I mean,
and usually if it's a place, it's impressive because it's really pretty or it's really big, you know, something like that.
Well, I mean,
it's really unusual in somewhere. And why is that specific to places?
I'm one of those people who can remember most of the most important moments of my life.
Yeah.
Why they were important, why they were watershed moments. And of course they never involve a specific place. They always involve certain people.
Almost always involve a tractor, however.
No, well, they pretty much have involved family members of mine, and they pretty much have happened in the vicinity of or at my home. And a lot of and the only exception to that where an experience I had is tied to a place is home, because I remember things like I remember in the autumn when we had this part of the farm where, for whatever reason, we didn't plant anything there. We just let the grass grow every year. And in the autumn and also in the spring, the grass was dry, you know, this tall grass. It wasn't like real prairie tall grass. It was just like tall grass.
Yeah.
And It would get dry, and it was cold outside in the early spring and in the late fall. But if you went out into that big grassy area and you found a place where you could sort of mat the grass down a little bit, you could lay in it and the sun would warm you up, even if it was like, you know, 39 degrees outside. And the grass made it, when the wind blew through it, it just made this, you know, this soft whispering noise, And that was just amazing. And I mean, you know, I just went out there and napped in the grass like every spring and fall for like, you know, 10 years. And I remember every single time what that felt like, what it smelled like, what it sounded like. And it wasn't just a sensual experience. I felt as though the land itself was sort of holding me or embracing me, or you know what I'm saying? There was a familiar connection there. And I remember that. And I remember things like that, with going out and exploring and stuff. And that's the only really exception to the rule of the most of the times in my life I remember that were really important, involved a person. And I can't say that really about very many other places. I mean, like I said, I've been out to East Tennessee where my ancestors were from. I saw where three generations of my grandfathers were buried, and that was a profound experience for me. But it still doesn't match those early experiences that I was growing
because
up on the farm.
Growing up on that farm, there was a very rare mutated mold spore that would come out in the spring and the autumn and give you this experience. And it was the most I ever threw up, and it changed my life forever. We are so out of time, you know, with all the board games and gods and stuff. You should go to the blog and tell us about your seven wonders of the world. And
why you think this show is really boring.
Yes. And if you'd like to buy that video game, or not that video, that video game or the board game, because we talked about both. And tell us whatever else you think. If you don't particularly want it to show up in the hat, you can just go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and talk about it there. Lots of other people talk about it there. You can, too.
Thanks, Craig, for your question.
Thank you, Craig.
Sorry we didn't have a very good answer.
You should answer your own question on the blog, because people should do that. In the meantime, we will talk to you in a week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Okay. Maybe somebody will have seen the new Thor movie by then. Who knows?
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.